Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Chris Cameron, and our guest this week, Erica Rummel, visiting us by Zoom. Each week, we visit with a local or regional author or other persons involved with writers and readers. We ask our guests to introduce us to their work and to read for us. We like to get a glimpse into their lives and find out what inspires them, what prompts them to write. We're delighted to have Erica Rummel pay us another visit today. Erica Rummel is the author-editor of many nonfiction historical works, the most recent being A Nobel Affair, an edited collection of correspondence between Alfred Nobel and his Viennese mistress, Sophie Hess. Last year, one of her historical novels, Inquisitor's Niece, received the award for Best Historical Novel from the Colorado Publishers Association. This year has been particularly busy. Three books on which she worked in 2018-19 have come home to roost, all at the same time. The first, a translation from the German of a biographer of the philosopher and humanist Erasmus of Rotterdam. The second, a non-fiction book about the man who was Austria's chancellor when the Nazis occupied the country in 1938, and who was kept in Nazi prisons and concentration camps for 7 years until he was liberated by the Allies in 1945. The third book is a new historical novel, The Road to Gesualdo, set in 16th century Italy. First, Erica, congratulations on the Colorado Publishers Association Award. What have been the results of winning that prize?
Well, for one thing, I didn't have to look around for a publisher for my next novel. DX Varos, the publisher of the award-winning novel, was very keen to follow up on this success and was in fact urging me to get on with it, with the novel that I was working on, The Road to Gesualdo. And here it is, ready to go, and it will come out next month on the 7th of July, to be exact.
Turning to The Road to Gesualdo, what is it about?
It is the story of a noble woman, Leonora, who enters into an arranged marriage with Prince Carlo Gesualdo and is shocked to discover that her husband is mentally unstable and has murdered his first wife. But it's also the story of Leonora's lady-in-waiting, Livia, and her lover, Pietro, who is apparently ready to sacrifice his love for his career. So Pietro's career ambitions on the one hand and Prince Carlo's mental illness on the other involve the two couples in dangerous intrigues. And the novel is about their struggle, both internally with themselves and with the external forces of evil. And as you can imagine, that makes for many twists and turns in the story.
Well, Erica, you've already garnered pre-publication reviews, one by Jason Bettis from the Chicago Center for Literature and Photography, who wrote an intelligently rambling look at life in 16th century Italy, married to a storyline that hints at supernatural evil. This leisurely stroll through the very real seeming daily lives of courtesans, countesses, merchants, and priests is one many people will enjoy, even if there is always a rational explanation for everything and no sexy vampires.
I don't know why he expected sexy vampires, but I would like to give our listeners a taste of my novel and read a bit of the first chapter. Spring was in the air. The capes of the two ladies strolling in the garden were fluttering in the warm breeze. It was a glorious day, but Livia was in a dark mood. "Something is not right," she said to her mistress. "Every time I mention Prince Carlo's name, people lower their eyes and fall silent. What are they holding back?" "I don't want to know," Leonora d'Este said and heaved a sigh. "What's the use of chasing rumors? The contract is signed. I must do my duty and marry the man my brother has chosen for me." Livia threw up her hands in frustration. "You must do your duty. You must do as your brother says. And what if it turns out that Prince Carlo is a monster?" "He isn't," Leonora said. She held out a pendant dangling from a gold chain around her neck. Prince Carlo had sent her a locket with his portrait. She opened it for Livia to see. "You may judge for yourself," she said. The man in the portrait looked young and handsome. He has sensitive lips, don't you think? Leonora said. Livia couldn't agree. They look cruel to me. Oh, Livia, I couldn't love and obey a man who is cruel, Leonora said. Livia took her mistress's arm and patted it fondly. I didn't mean to make you uneasy, she said, softening her voice. I should have kept my mouth shut, she thought. It's true. Women have no say in marriage matters. Leonora was obliged to marry a man she did not know and might not be able to love. Livia knew her admirer Pietro very well and loved him dearly, but was obliged to decline his attentions. She had no dowry, and Pietro had no money of his own. He could not afford to marry her. Livia forced herself to stop thinking about Pietro and took up the conversation again. What does your brother say about the prince? I had only one question of him. Will I be able to love Carlo Gesualdo? But Cesare doesn't care about love. Wealth and standing are all that counts with him. The prince is the descendant of an ancient family and commands great wealth. What more do you want? He said. That's all the information he gave me, and that's all he cares about. Let me make inquiries, Livia said. I'll ask Pietro. He was present at the marriage negotiations and can tell us what kind of a man Prince Carlo is. When his servant announced that Livia Prevera had come with a message from her mistress, Pietro's face lit up. Livia, he said when she entered the room. What a pleasant surprise. He came around the desk and led her to the window seat. It was narrow and served as a convenient excuse to draw close to her. But as it turns out, they don't actually have much time to talk because Livia hears someone at the door. She briskly backed away and barely managed to say, thank you for the information, before a servant entered the room, followed by a man with dark curly hair and the neck of a bull, Leonora's brother. Cesare had the solid step of a warrior on the march. He came to a halt when he saw Livia. She curtsied to him. He shot her a hard, weathered look as she passed by him on her way out. As soon as she had gone, he pounced on Pietro. What information did you give that woman, if I may ask? I trust you said nothing about the prince's late wife. Cesare was a man who did not need to raise his voice to make faces blanch and hands tremble. A stare from his steely eyes could be unnerving, but Pietro knew better than to show fear to a bully. He smiled amiably. Of course not, he said. Indeed, there had been no time, and Pietro had said nothing about the bloody murder of the prince's first wife or about the strange scene he had witnessed during a hunting party arranged for the prince. The courtiers had spent the night in the forest surrounding Gesualdo, where a camp had been set up. Early in the morning, Pietro was woken by the sound of a horse neighing. He parted the tent flap and in the gray light of dawn saw a solitary rider leaving the camp. The prince, Pietro thought, but no, he must be mistaken. The prince would not go anywhere without his attendants. Pietro sensed an adventure coming his way and followed the rider. They were going in the direction of the river. Prince Carlo dismounted and walked slowly forward toward the riverbank, which dropped precipitously to the water's edge, some 20 feet below. Did he not realize how close he was to the brink, how close to taking a headlong fall into the river? The prince was leaning forward now. Pietro shouted a warning and set off at a run. Without stopping to think, he tackled the prince bodily and pulled him back. Don Carlo hung in his arms like a puppet, stiff, silent, insensate. Pietro lowered him gently to the ground and kneeled down beside him. The prince's face was pale, his mouth contorted and moving strangely as if he was chewing his tongue. Pietro called his name, shook his shoulders, massaged his chest, all to no avail. And so he goes to fetch help, but the prince's steward does not exactly thank him. He fixed Pietro with a hard stare. What were you doing here at this early hour? He asked, without even a pretense of civility. There was displeasure in his voice, or perhaps something more than displeasure, suspicion. I had too much wine last night, Pietro said. I needed fresh air. I saw the prince standing at the edge of the cliff. He did not seem well, and I was afraid for his safety. Your concern for the prince does you credit, young man, but you are too easily alarmed. I suggest you keep your impressions to yourself. If you open your mouth, you will make a fool of yourself. A steep crease appeared between his contracted brows. Or worse than a fool. Pietro bowed. He understood that he had seen what he was not supposed to see. But what exactly had he seen? He could not make sense of the incident. Was the prince suicidal? Was he possessed? Was he suffering from the so-called sacred disease, the falling sickness? So this is the man Leonora must marry, and you can see the problems shaping up.
Thank you very much, Erica. Now we'll take a short break.